Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me for our sixth year, calendar year of podcasting, is Akiva Wienerker. Wheels, how's it rolling?
Sixth calendar year. So 2019, 18, 17, 16, 15. That's fair.
Yeah. Kind of crazy. I didn't think we'd last this long.
No, I know.
Now our podcast children have children.
I know,
that
is true. Like, there's a new podcast out. And I was like, is that in the...
Av Sinetsky's on like four different podcasts at this point.
Yeah, it's a spinoff of... Of a spinoff, and it's like, is it in our universe? Yeah. I don't think so.
No.
But they're in our coaching tree. In our coaching tree.
Yeah, I think that's how it works. You get credit all the way down the coaching tree. But we have a lot to get to this week. It is the playoffs. Only 11 NFL games remaining. Four of them this week. Your team's done. My team will probably be done in about 5 days from now, or fewer, three days
definitely.
From now.
Your team's definitely going to be done.
Yeah. We also, we want to talk television of 2019. I think it was a great year for TV, and we haven't done that yet. So we're going to do that here on the regular feed. But let's start with pouring one out for the great David Stern, passed away last night.
Yeah, that's sad. I was thinking, has there ever been, since the baseball flipped commissioners a couple times in the late 80s, early 90s, right? From the Selig era on.
Well, didn't Giamatti die like... Within months of getting his appointment. Yeah.
There's never been a commissioner who's been fired or like forced to quit. Like every single commissioner has lasted forever.
Yeah. So Gary Bettman has been around. I think he's the original. I think before him, the NHL didn't have commissioners. They had presidents.
Remember, each conference used to have a president in the NHL, which is insane. Yeah. Like there's no reason to separate two conferences. But
Selig sort of came in as.
And baseball had that too, but they were.
Guy. The interim guy eventually took over the job full time, and he did it till he retired. Tagliabue did it till he retired. Stern did it till he retired. So yeah, that's a good point. But Stern, you'd agree, clearly the best, the best commissioner at least of our lifetimes, right?
Yeah. No. Well, Goodell won, Stern too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stern for sure. I mean, Bettman is. It's funny because like Bettman and Goodell are both so bad. Manfred might end up being really good, and so might Stern's successor Adam Silver. But it's too early to tell.
Yeah. If I had to rank them right now, from worst to first, I'd say Goodell, Bettman. Manfred, just because, he hasn't been around long enough yet. He hasn't done anything of note positive yet. Selig, Tagliabue, who did a good job, I think, but just, hard to follow who he was following.
Yeah, but Tagliabue did do a good job. Then, and the truth is, the sport really became
number
one
under his.
No, he
did a very good job, yeah.
And they had very few controversies. There were far fewer controversies on
the Tagliabue. But he was good, but he just, he was sort of like Silver following Stern, I think. And then Silver and then Stern. Stern, everybody said it, but when he took over the NBA as the commissioner, it was literally like, their game, they didn't have games on live television. And now it's the biggest global game in the world. On a personal level for me, I think Stern's legacy affects my day-to-day work just about every day. Cause Stern first started working on the NBA as the outside counsel. He was at a law firm called Proskauer Rose in New York City, which to this day, thanks to Stern and then Adam Silver also came out of Proskauer, is one of, if not the biggest sports law firms in the country. And we work opposite them across from the table from them on deals, almost every day. So, and I assume that doesn't happen if not for what Stern becomes, which sort of helps Proskauer sports practice grow and grow. But David Stern, no longer with us, watching basketball in heaven, I guess. So what do you want to do first? You want to do playoffs first? You want to do TV first?
Let's do TV. TV, because it's all the year's over. The year, every second we go, the year is even more over. So give me. Okay. I don't have a countering list because I didn't really watch prestige TV this year. So I just want to hear your top 20 or whatever you're going to do this year.
Yeah, you just watch. Do you know how much my wife has been watching? So there's 90 Day Fiancé, and then there's spinoff stuff. Apparently,
so many spinoffs.
Yeah, my wife watches this stuff around.
It's crazy that I don't get any messages like, "Hey, what do you think about this? Like, oh, we should talk."
Yeah, I by osmosis have started to watch some of this crap show.
Who do you
also.
Like? Which couples do you like?
There's
an early season couple that met on Birthright. They're like one of the more normal.
I didn't. I don't know the names of anybody. So there's the one couple which I get so upset that I have to stop watching because I think the show is exploitative. It's an African American man, and he's dating a Russian woman who's clearly just using him for his money. Do you know what I'm talking about? He sent her $40,000.
Yeah, but that's fake. You don't see her, right?
Excuse me.
He works at a nail salon.
I forget, but
you don't see her. It's a catfish. She doesn't exist.
He seems to be low IQ, and it seems very wrong to me that he's being taken advantage of. Like, the show, I understand, like, it's a documentary and the show doesn't want to interject itself.
No, the show interjects itself like plenty. You're completely wrong.
Oh, it does. Okay.
It's the opposite. It's fake.
So, yeah.
That whole thing it's a bogus cat.
Oh, okay.
He is low IQ, and they are taking advantage of him, but not in the way you think, probably.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That makes me feel a little better, I guess. So there's two shows that I haven't yet seen from 2019 that I intend on seeing. I've seen the first episode of Watchmen. I haven't seen the rest, so that's not on this list. But from the reviews and the way people went bonkers for the finale, that'll probably be higher on this list when I eventually see it. Also, I haven't seen the latest season of The Crown, which probably would be somewhere in the middle of this list, but I'll definitely see it as well. The only other show that I was interested in, but I've heard nobody talk about it, is On Becoming a God in Central Florida on Showtime. Have you
heard about it?
Show?
That's it.
And what have you heard?
Nothing. That it's a show. I don't know if it's good or bad.
That it exists. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I think that 2019 was a very strong year for shows. So when we did our movie podcast, the movies of the decade, I didn't rank my movies on the podcast. I just mentioned them. And then afterwards, I actually did rank them for the purpose of the spreadsheet. Kind of did the same thing here. These aren't in like a strict order. So, you know, if you have a strong take that number 7 is better than or worse than number 13, like, you know, don't at me because I'm not disagreeing. These are shows that I liked and would recommend to
someone. This is the famous Family Guy list from the last time you did this.
Yeah. So, yeah, I finally quit a couple shows like that. So a few honorable mentions before I get to the top 20. Three HBO shows that I have varying opinions about. Not good enough to be my top 20. One is Righteous Gemstones. Are you watching Righteous Gemstones? I guess not, because you have dropped off. Hello.
No, what I blipped out and in of Skype. Keep going.
Oh, are you watching Righteous Gemstones?
No, but it's funny because I've seen all of their other shows, but for whatever reason, I have not watched.
Yeah.
Is it better than the other shows? Because the last four shows they've done have been the exact same.
Yeah, Danny McBride is the same in everything he does.
He's like the number one type. Like the last show we did, we said this. Like the, you know... He's like the number one. I play the same character.
Vice Prince,
in every...
Yeah, so that's kind of why I'm a little bit out on that. Catherine the Great, did you watch that on HBO? So it was like a four-part miniseries. Catherine the Great, played by Helen Mirren, not by Dame Judi Dench. It was so good. For the first episode and a half, Jen and I were sort of confused. We kept thinking that they were based in England, not Russia. Because everybody has a British accent, and it's Helen Mirren who's played the Queen, the Queen of England before. So that was a little bit confusing. It was very meh. I learned a lot about who Potemkin was, and before that, I only knew the expression Potemkin Village, so that was worth something. But it was not very good. But I watch it anyways. And then the other HBO show out of my top 20 was a show you never watched, which is crazy to me because you claim to be a football fan and you claim to be a fan of The Rock, but you never watched Ballers.
No, because it's not good.
And Ballers final season. Yeah, the final season was absurd, but it was entertaining in a sense. So those are the three HBO shows.
I'm a fan of The Rock who doesn't consume any of his content, famously. I watched Jumanji, I think, with the kids, but I have seen like two Rock movies ever.
I'm really hacking up a lung here this morning. All right, so let's get to my top 20. So number 20 is another show, sort of, you know, anytime you have a period drama, especially like historical drama based on something that actually happened, I'm always going to watch it. And so that applies as well to Chernobyl. Did you watch Chernobyl?
No.
Okay. Did you know there was a show
about
Chernobyl?
Yeah, of course, It was, people HBO. Were talking about it. It just didn't really interest me to watch it.
Yeah, Jared Harris was the one of the main stars. So that's number 20 on my list. It was fine. It was good. It, you know, one of the things I appreciate about shows like that, whether it's Catherine the Great or Chernobyl, is that it'll lead me to that and sort of go Google and learn more about a topic that I didn't really know that much about. And that's sort of the main value. It was better than Catherine the Great. It was definitely worth watching, but it wasn't amazing. So it's just number 20 on my list. Number 19 is Brockmire. Please tell me you're watching Brockmire.
No, I saw season one and maybe two, but I'm not up to date on Brockmire. I liked it, but it never made me like, hey, you have to come back and watch this. Has it gotten better?
Yeah, it's not a must-watch, but it's a half-hour comedy, and there's, like eight to ten episodes a year, so it's not very hard to bang out.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hank Azaria is always great, and, you know, it's a sports component, so if you like sports, if you like comedy, if you like The Simpsons or anything Hank Azaria's done, I would definitely recommend it. So in season three, he gets called up to the big leagues, and it's more of the same, but it's fine. It's not amazing, but it's an enjoyable show. Number 18 is The Spy.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, so The Spy is a Netflix miniseries starring Sacha Baron Cohen as Eli Cohen, no relation. This is a story that you and I are very familiar with before.
Oh,
the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, yeah. This I'm familiar with. Yeah. The Man in Damascus.
I'm shocked you didn't see this.
No, because everyone said it's bad. It got terrible reviews. Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, because I was talking to some of my friends about their lists, some listeners of ours before this podcast, and a number of them had this show pretty high up on their list. I was kind of surprised, actually. To me, it was, if you weren't already interested in the story, you might not be as interested, although you can make the opposite argument that if you don't know the story, you'd appreciate it more because it's such a bonkers story. It's like, it's too incredible to be believed. The Spy is the true story of Eli Cohn, who was a Mossad spy, who was a Syrian Jew, and he moved to Syria in the 1960s and basically got himself, he infiltrated into the Syrian Ministry of Defense and basically became like, you know, close with sort of all the top brass in Syrian high society. And he was actually the deputy, he was named in his fake character, Kamel Tabit, whatever it was, he became the deputy defense minister of Syria, and he was close with the president of Syria. So it's a true story about an incredible true story of how high up he got in Syria, and it shows some of the famous things that he did that even after he was caught, Syria still didn't really realize some of the things he had done, which helped Israel immensely in the Six-Day War, which followed in 1967 between Syria and Israel. So it's an incredible story. It's Sacha Baron Cohen, who's always good in everything he does. You know, there's no comedy in this role. He plays it very, very straight. And, you know, there's also the psychological aspect of, you know, when you're pretending to be two people, when are you when are you the other? You know, when he goes back to Israel on occasion to visit his family and his wife, he sort of forgets who he is and, you know, which character is he? And he has to remember, obviously, two completely different backstories. So I'm surprised you didn't see The Spy, and I would definitely, it's only six
episodes.
All right,
so I'll check it out, but it got pretty poor reviews.
Yeah. Let's see what the reviews are. It has 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. So
from
I'm not sure where you're getting that from. On Metacritic, it's 73 out of 100.
That's not great.
So, Alan Sepwal said, Baron Cohen couldn't have found a role more well-suited to
he
his
didn't
Gibson
like it.
Career to
I
date.
Think his review was...
The Spy is a thriller played straight. Sepwal did.
I think he did not.
He wrote a very glowing review in Rolling Stone.
I think he liked Sacha Baron Cohen's performance, but not the show.
I mean, on Wikipedia it says the performance was well received. Rolling, anyways. The point is, it's a worthwhile show. It's only six episodes. Watch an episode, see if you like it, and then
you can really say
that
about all these shows. Watch one episode, you'll know if you're gonna like it or not.
Yeah, but you know, I would definitely if you're really into the story, I can't believe you haven't watched it. And if you know nothing about the story, it's also worthwhile just because it's such an incredible story. And I hope I didn't spoil it too much by stating what I stated. But all right, number 17 is Billions. You know, Billions is a kind of it's definitely on the downswing, but it's still popcorn. It's still enjoyable to watch. There's still comedic moments, but we're not The Ringer, so we're not going to discuss Billions anymore. Do you even watch it?
Never seen 1 second.
I mean, that's a mistake. The first season was great.
Not for me.
All right, number 16 is a show I just saw on Saturday night. I banged through the whole thing. I saw it on Netflix. I heard nothing about it. It's called Kevin Hart. Don't Fuck This Up.
Yeah, people are saying that it's pretty wild. Well, tell me about it.
So, I mean, I knew very little about Kevin Hart, I guess. I enjoy some of his movies, but I can't remember anything about them. I thought when he hosted SNL a couple years ago, he did a great job. I've never really been a fan of his stand-up. I sort of identify it as like sort of the Dane Cook sort of, you know, like light, you know, big stadium sellout kind of stand-up. But watching this, I was aware of, but had forgotten about, like, you know, like the fact that he was named to host the Oscars, and then he had like old offensive tweets to the LGBT community, and so then he got fired for that, or
his,
you know,
documentary, are they following, like, I saw they was vaguely following him during this whole ordeal?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
so it follows him during this whole thing. It's produced by him, so obviously that's the perspective. But he's very open to criticism. He, you know, he shows a lot of people criticizing him, and Terry Crews, and Don Lemon, and whatever else, and news reporters, and I will say this: if nothing else, like, he works his ass off. He's the hardest working person in showbiz, and he deserves like every dollar that he makes. And so, all credit to him for that. Like, he's sort of so the opposite of the stereotype of like a comic.
Yeah,
you know?
What's the stereotype of a comic? They work hard. They, like,
you know,
go across,
like,
the
like Jeff Ross, like lazy, and they wake up at 2, and you know, then they're self hating. And I mean, he really busts his balls. He comes from difficult background. He's a very positive person, and again, he's a very honest and self critical person, I think. And so it's very interesting. And again, it's the kind of show you can watch on 1.5 speed, and so you can bang out the whole thing pretty quickly. If you appreciate comedy, or if you just appreciate somebody that is a very like his goal is to be a billionaire and to be a mogul. He's very open about that.
That's so stupid for me. The one thing I'll say, and I have no problem with Kevin Hart, is the richer you get, the worse you become as a comic because you lose so much touch with the world. And we've seen that with
but that's
Eddie
why
Murphy
he's trying to go
Chappelle
beyond that. He's becoming a producer. Like, yeah, he doesn't just want to be a stand-up.
But he won't
though.
Be a stand-up. He'll be horrendous.
Not for long. Yeah. No, I agree. All right. Number 15 is Mrs. Fletcher, based on the novel.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch this?
I saw the first episode.
Yeah, you weren't into it?
I liked it, but first of all, it's like a one-time thing. I didn't realize. It's not like...
It's a one season,
so
yeah.
I was like, how committed am I going to be to this?
Yeah, so I'll say this. My wife liked it so much that she like then bought the book. Catherine Hahn is phenomenal. She's always very good, I think. The story, I think the story pays off in a very satisfying way. I don't want to say anything, but like the first episode, I was really frustrated by a couple things, and some of the characters are a little bit stereotypy.
Yeah.
But things come together in interesting ways, and it's you know, there's developments that are sort of incomplete, which I think is how life is, and I don't know. I think it did a pretty good job, and there's only I think what 7 episodes. It's based on a novel. It plays Catherine Hahn as a mom whose son goes off to college, and all of a sudden, like a single mom whose son goes off to college, and all of a sudden she's home alone. And you know, one thing, and I think people have pointed this out, like a valuable thing this show does is it shows how like. You know, when we're kids, we really only see things from our perspective, and you don't see things from your parents' perspective at all. And I know, like, when I went away to high school, or because I left before college, I went away for high school, it never once entered my head, like, how is this affecting my parents? And now I'm a parent, and all of a sudden you see things from the parents' perspective. And this show does a good job of showing both perspectives. I would recommend Mrs. Fletcher. It was a good show that my wife and I could watch together. So that's number 15. Number 14, Silicon Valley, its final season. Did you watch the show either?
No, I've never seen. I've maybe seen the first episode of Silicon Valley.
Did you watch anything this year?
No, I was saying that's why I'm not doing a list. I was very clear.
Ugh, you're annoying. Yeah. Okay. So Silicon Valley, it was not as good. It certainly started better. T.J. Miller was written off the show because he got canceled, and then Thomas Middleditch is doing his best to get himself canceled. Also, meanwhile, Kumail Nanjiani has turned himself into like a superhero. You know, I thought it was a satisfying conclusion. It sort of ended in a very similar way to the way Veep ended, mm-hmm. without too many spoilers. The final season was only, 7 episodes, so look, if you're not watching Silicon Valley, you're not going to start now. But I always liked Silicon Valley more than Veep, and I thought Veep was a little overrated, frankly. Okay. Which is kind of how I felt between like Parks and Rec and 30 Rock. I always thought 30 Rock was better than Parks and Rec, and it was sort of annoyed me that the general perception was the other way around. But this year, I have the reverse. I have Veep higher up on my list and Silicon Valley lower. So Veep ended up on a higher note, I thought, and just had the jokes per minute were out of control, whereas Silicon Valley was not as good as its earlier seasons, but it was a satisfying conclusion. Number 13, BoJack Horseman. Have you seen that show?
Yes. Except okay. I'm still in the middle of that season. I'm going to watch I watched the first few episodes, and because it's coming back in a few weeks, I'm just going to binge the rest of them with the... Like, so there's no, if there's a cliffhanger or something, then I could just go straight into the finale.
Yeah, so they sort of did, like, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones style. They've split season 6 into 2 parts. So, yeah, so only season 6A came out this year in 2019, and then season 6B or whatever, like the other half of season 6 is coming out, I think, the end of January, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But BoJack's is a phenomenal show, and it's To me, it's definitely taken the reins from you know, I guess started from The Simpsons or from The Flintstones, I guess, to The Simpsons to Family Guy to South Park is like by far the best animated show. And it just because it's animated, it has the ability to have so many jokes in every single scene because, you know, you can just draw things right in the background or, you know, have things float by. And
I will say my BoJack take is easy to reference. I loathe the puns.
Oh, I love the puns.
They're so
like
stupid.
The signs?
No, the signs are fine. No. Everything the agent says is the worst thing I've ever heard.
No, see, I love puns. I'm all about puns. That's why I like my
Cheska so much.
They're
too obvious. They're too easy. You could sit in a room. It's like on the fly, it's one thing. But if you have a year to think of
them. Keith, I got news for you. We're middle-aged dads. It's time to embrace the pun life.
I hate them.
All right. Number 12, another HBO show, Barry.
Oh, yeah, that I saw. All right, so far that's my number one show of the year because you haven't mentioned anything else.
Okay. Barry to me is a little overrated because people like go a little bit too bonkers for it, in my opinion. What's your take on Barry?
You know, I love Henry Winkler. I love the albino. I like everyone on that show. Everyone's great.
NoHo Hank, which I think you were about to call the albino. Is what
Albanian,
call him,
I was
right?
going
to
say.
Oh, Albanian. Oh, Anthony Kerrigan. He's the funniest character.
He's really
TV
good.
In
NoHo Hank's great. Bill Hader's great.
NoHo Hank is amazing. Stephen Root, I hate in everything he does, but that's not a criticism of him. I think he's just a really good actor, so he plays like really hateable characters. Sarah Goldberg, I think, plays Sally Reed. She does such a good job as like an aspiring actress that when I've seen her in other things, I'm like, oh, good for Sally. She's like getting on shows. So she's playing herself, I guess. I don't know. But NoHo Hank really carries this show. Bill Hader is, you know, he plays the straight man. He really doesn't do that much in this show. In terms of as an actor,
it depends
also,
on the episode.
You know, directs
but I hear
the
what
you're show, and, yeah. But like he's getting nominated for like as an actor. Like I don't know if he deserves that. You know, maybe he deserves it for his other roles in the show as the showrunner or whatever. But NoHo Hank should win all the awards though. He's very very good. Number 11, Big Mouth. You watching Big Mouth?
No, people keep telling me to watch Big Mouth, but I'm probably not going to watch.
Yeah, it's Kroll and Mulaney. What more do you need
to know?
I think
it's mostly Kroll. Did you love the Kroll show?
What do you mean mostly?
I don't think
Kroll.
Mulaney.
It's equally.
No,
Kroll
I don't think Mulaney makes it. I think Kroll makes it.
Well, Kroll and Mulaney star
know,
as the two
I
main
think
characters.
Mulaney's just a voice. I don't think it's his show. I think it's just the Kroll show.
Oh,
I think.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't appeal to me. Middle aged cartoon kids. That's not my thing.
They're not middle aged. What do you mean? They're teenagers. They're
middle
school.
That's what I mean. Well, I call them.
Kids. Oh. The one creepy thing is I do feel a little bit weird as a 36-year-old watching a show about like 13-year-old girls having like their first like periods and stuff like that. You know, I wonder if I had a kid that age, I guess I should ask like Bill Simmons' kids to come on and tell me what they think. I know that Simmons' son is obsessed with the show and like was so excited to meet Nick Kroll and like hear all the voices that Kroll did. So, you know, I wonder if I was that age, like how I think about it, but it's like Superbad was very good at showing what it was like to be a teenage boy, and this show goes even a few years younger than that and does it both for boys and for girls, and I think it does a good job of that. It's also very, very funny. It has an amazing cast because it has all their comedy friends, obviously like Jason Mantzoukas and Jenny Slate and Jesse Klein, and like, you know, so all those people are on it. And yeah, I mean, Big Mouth is very good and it's very funny, so you should be watching it. All right, let's get to the top 10.
Sure. Number 10.
All right, number 10 is Veep.
All right, I've seen Veep, but I stopped. I stopped when, I think I stopped when Iannucci left, even though I don't like him.
Even though you're not an
Iannucci guy at all.
Yeah, you never watched In the Loop like you were supposed to.
One day I will watch that. That's on my list.
Yeah. No, because you don't watch movies after the year
in
which they come out.
That's true. It would have to be released.
Yeah, so you'll never watch it. Yeah, Veep, I always thought Veep was a little bit overrated, but it went out with a bang. Season 7 was great. It just, again, the jokes per minute in the show is out of control. It's a very good show to watch, like clips on YouTube of like the congressman, what's his name, who's always insulting his underling. I mean, that can apply to so many people on this show, but I forget his name now. It's they're famous comedian actors. They're famous like that guys in comedies. Anyways, it's very, very funny, and it went out with a bang. So, but the problem with Veep is it came out in the Obama era, and it was like this absurd take, and then Trump got elected, and now like Veep is like less crazy than real life.
I think
like the Jonah character on Veep is like played by Timothy Simons, who's very, very good at everything he does. He's such like a great like tall asshole. is the way I would describe him. He's basically like, he plays such an absurd character, but like Trump is even crazier. And so like the show had to like try and keep up with real life, but it's very hard to do in the Trump era. So, but Veep did a very good job. Number 9, a show really just for me, Magic for Humans. I love magic. And so, this is a Netflix show. Came
is
out
it kosher?
Two, last month. Is it kosher? Yeah. I've showed
episodes.
Oh, okay,
fun.
Kids.
So I'll watch it with my kids actually.
Yeah. My kids love magic also. They're blown away, but you know, my kids like, you know, buy magic for what it's worth more than I do, obviously, because you know they're 7 and 5 and 3. So I mean, the 3-year-old's too young for the show, and the 5-year-old even borderline. But the 7-year-old really likes it. The parts I've shown him, it's definitely kosher. Yeah, there's nothing inappropriate about it. And
what's it called? Magic for
so
what?
If you like magic? Magic for Humans. It's very lighthearted. It's not the best like magic I've ever seen, but he does a very good job of it. He's got some humanity to it, and he's got a good job of appealing to like a wide audience. Like you could, it's a show you could watch with your whole family. So. All right, number 8 is Fleabag. Are you a Fleabag
I watched
watcher?
First episode and I said, I'm sure I would like this, but I'm not going to continue.
Okay, so I watched the whole of Fleabag in 2019, so I'm a little don't remember exactly which part was which season. But, you know, Fleabag probably overrated in that it's winning all the awards, and Phoebe Bridge, what's her name?
Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She was on the short list for winning 2019, yeah. But she did not win it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, she won like award after award after award at the Emmys. And I don't know. It's funny. My wife hates the show because my wife thinks it's like a very anti-feminist show, which I try to explain to my wife. Like, so if you don't show a woman like purely in a positive light, you're an anti-feminist show. Like, isn't it feminist that you have a female anti-hero protagonist? But Jen's like, but she's a loser. I'm like, anyway. So Jen was not a big fan of Fleabag.
Okay.
Let's get to number 7, which is a woman who is insanely successful in the show. The character is to an absurd, unrealistic level. Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, I haven't seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Not going to watch it. No interest, but tell me about it.
Oh, so, well, I mean, now, I did not like Gilmore Girls. I mean, I haven't seen Gilmore Girls, to be fair. So I guess maybe I would like it. But so it's made by the same people. You know what it's about. Why are you not interested in it?
Because it's old. The only things that are interesting are things that take place in the present.
What? Because it's set in
the
50s?
Yeah, who cares about the 50s?
Okay. So, first of all, because I love comedy, so I will watch any show about comedy. Like, I watched that show on Showtime that Jim Carrey produced about comedy that no one else watched.
Yeah, you are
truly.
I think it's back.
No, I thought it was canceled. Oh, it is?
Maybe it's not.
That would be amazing news, because I love it.
Oh, I thought I saw it on the streaming sites, but maybe they were just re-uploading old episodes, but it was there.
Oh, okay. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is very good. It's annoying how she is like so perfect in every, like, she's like the best comedian of all time, and she has like no downs in her career. Her career is just up, up, mm-hmm. up. I love the guy who plays Lenny Bruce. He's been in a bunch of other stuff also. It's light. It's sort of a snacky show. It's not deep. It tries to be it sometimes, but it's not because but it's very colorful. Honestly, like, I watch so many shows that are so dark, like literally, like the screen is so dark,
mm-hmm. and it's nice like to the watch battle in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly. I like to watch shows once in a while that have bright mm-hmm. colors and, you know, are chirpy and peppy. And so that definitely Mrs. Maisel is that. Number 6 is, I think, the show that when I did the mid-season, like the mid-year show rankings in like May, I think this is my number 1 show of the year at the time, was When Heroes Fly.
Yeah, but wasn't this a 2018 show?
No, it came out on Netflix in January.
Okay, so then this is also in my, this is my top 2 with Barry.
Oh, okay. So you actually saw it.
My wife and I watched it. It's the only show we've binged successfully in the last 15 years.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. I've listened to like one person I know who really dislikes the show. And the reasons he gave me, I think the second half of the season is not as good as the first half of the
season.
Yeah,
some episodes are much better than others, for sure.
Yeah, it becomes a little bit, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but it becomes a little bit absurd. But the first half of the season is so good. And just the broader idea of a group of soldiers who went through trauma and come together like 10 years later. So we had there's this organization that brings old Israeli combat units who have experienced trauma. It's sort of 10 years later, it brings them together in another country, either in England or America. They bring them together for like a week of intense group mm-hmm. therapy. And so these guys were in our neighborhood a couple of weeks ago. And so we hosted two guys in our house for a week. And we were talking to them, and they were and I mentioned the show to them, and I almost felt embarrassed doing it, because usually, like, you talk to someone who really did something about mm-hmm. a show based on that world, and they'll
it's like meeting someone from Baltimore, and your first question is, you like The Wire?
Yeah, exactly. But they told me, these two guys, anyways, I can't speak for anyone else, they loved the show so much, and one of them said how the show affected him so much that he had a son right after he saw the show, and he named his son after one of the main characters in the show.
That's weird.
So and they talked about, like, you know, just the idea of how this trauma when you're in the military or undergo any kind of, you know, stressful group experience, that you never, you know, if you don't address it, it can really like sort of haunt you psychologically for years. And whether it's literally PTSD or just, you know, it sort of affects your life and puts a cloud over your life in a lot of ways. And to come together years later and try and resolve those things. And so that's literally what these guys were doing in my house for a week. And so they talked about how, so When Heroes Fly is, it's a show, I would really recommend it, even if the latter episodes get a little bit absurd in some mm-hmm. ways. Number 5, similar to Fleabag in that it's a show, it's a comedy based in London that I saw the whole series this year. So I forget which part was the final season in 2019, but Catastrophe.
Yeah, no, I hate Rob Delaney, so I wouldn't watch it.
Yeah. So I dislike Rob Delaney, like his character, like his real life character that he mm-hmm. plays. He's like he's a jerk. He was one of the original funny people on Twitter in like 2010, and then he just became like insufferable, I thought. Mm-hmm. But he's very likable on the show, And I thought the show does a very good job of showing like a marriage with warts and all. And I mean, I hope watchers who are married, their marriage is better than the marriage in this show. Mine certainly is. But it's a little interesting to see, even in a marriage that isn't always great, the fact that they do manage to stick together. And, you know, you do see some parts of your marriage in this show, I thought. So if you're married, I would recommend Catastrophe. I have a nit with how the series ends. If anyone wants to DM me privately, we can discuss that. I don't want to spoil it. But there's something mildly annoying to me about how it ends. All right, number four, Russian Doll. Tell me you've seen Russian Doll.
No, there's no way. Come on. You think that's the one I'm going to have seen of these 20, Russian Doll?
Why would you not have seen Russian Doll?
It's called Russian Doll. Like, first of all, I called it a babushka doll when you bought, because that's your birthday present for your wife, was the doll.
Yeah.
But it's really a Russian nesting doll, but then someone else called it a babushka doll to me. So maybe that's a thing. Tell me about Russian Doll. I don't know. It's who does it star again?
Natasha Lyonne.
Ramaz graduate, or at least Ramaz attendee.
Yeah. Who first, I think we probably first became famous star generation from American Pie, right?
Natasha Lyonne, like, it is an amazing story because she was like out of Hollywood and like half dead basically for a decade and made this miraculous comeback.
Spoiler alert, by the way. Yeah. Everything you just said is a huge spoiler for the show.
Yeah, but that's like her, that's like her Wikipedia page.
Oh,
so it's based on her? I have no idea. It's not set in Russia?
No, it's not based on her at all. Just the exact words you just said... Hamei Vinyavi. If you've seen the show, you know why what Akiva just said is very funny. And if you haven't, I knew about the show is that it's Natasha Lyonne. It takes place in New York City, and I was told it's very New York. It's very Jewish. And if you're interested,
so
in
I thought
New
it was
York,
set
Jews
in Russia or something. So maybe I'll check it out.
No, it's got nothing to do with Russia. Well, she plays a Russian Russian born in Russia girl, Jewish girl who lives in New York. But that's just who she is in real life.
And she's a doll.
And her accent sort of gives that away in real life. So that's who she plays in the show. It's phenomenal.
So I'll check out Russian Doll.
I knew nothing about it coming in.
So don't tell me.
I'll
watch
the first episode. Yeah. Sweet Birthday Baby. Russian Doll. I thought I knew about it. It turns out I knew less than I thought I did. And I really enjoyed it.
It's on my list. Yeah. It's actually
recommend
on my,
Russian
it's
Doll.
On my face.
Yeah, okay. And also, again, it's easy to bang out because it's...
Is it still going?
It's one season. It's seven episodes of one season. Eight episodes.
Is it coming
eight
back?
Episodes, and it's half hour each. Is it coming back? Yes. On June 11, 2019, Netflix renewed the series for a second season.
When did it first air? June?
When was the first season? When did it debut? February of last year.
So we're probably looking at the summer. Okay.
Yeah. It also, halfway through the season, it becomes a totally...
It's insane
I don't
that Netflix makes eight episodes, but it takes 15... Like, it's never 12 months later. It's always, like, a year plus, you know, after everyone's finished watching it. It's always, like, 16 months. And then eventually they miss a year. It's very stupid what Netflix does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the fact that they dump everything at once. I just think that it doesn't create buzz the way that...
A lot of the people who listen to this podcast in Rob's World are watching a show now. Netflix is dipping its toe in reality... And they started a new show where they're releasing like three episodes a week for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. So they are experimenting with it. Because people were talking about how Disney Plus had a big hit with the Baby Yoda show with The Mandalorian that people were talking about every week. And I know Netflix really took, I mean, this was, they were doing this anyway, but I know Netflix is,
just no matter how big a show is, you can't dominate the zeitgeist if you're to drop
for
all
more
episodes
than a week.
At once.
If Stranger Things did like
time.
Two episodes a week, it'd be all anybody would talk about for 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of a show that everybody talked about every week, Game of Thrones, number three on my list.
The odds before this year that Game of Thrones were not one or two. And first of all, they shouldn't even be on your list. But the odds that Game of Thrones, which I guess like it's only the third show here I've seen its entirety that you've mentioned. Every day that Game of Thrones goes by, it gets worse and worse, the final season.
Look, I'm going to try and live in a world, and I know like you know, someone like Av and Amir are definitely on the other side, and they love the final season, and they
it's
try
not
to
even a take.
It
it's like, do you realize Bran was named king at the end because he has the best story?
Yeah, spoiler alert, but yeah, it's the final season was abysmally bad. I don't mind where they got.
We have to put
just,
now.
You
have to put like a Game of Thrones spoiler at the beginning of
it. Yeah, it should have. They needed another four seasons to do what they did in the last season. In earlier seasons, one conversation would be an entire episode. And in season seven, they like did like 15 years worth.
Here's
of
where it got.
In,
here's
like,
why it got
minutes.
Worse, Alex. It got worse because
Because they mailed it in, they're ready to move
no,
on. To
no, no, no. I'm saying really 6 months later, after the show was over, why it got worse. Because they mailed it in to create a Star Wars trilogy that they immediately got fired from. Immediately. They rushed.
I don't know anything about Star Wars. Yeah, okay, so I don't know what that.
Do I? They rushed the show because they were hired to, I'm sure, get paid more money to do the Star Wars trilogy. And then the Game of Thrones, what's it called? Like there were so many haters out there that Star Wars backtracked and fired them.
The saddest thing to me about how Game of Thrones ended is that HBO was ready to pump out like a million different Game of Thrones spinoffs, and the final season was so bad that it sort of killed.
I think they will. I think they like always intended to make one. It was like survival of the fittest.
The Godfather Part 1 and Part 2 are two of the best three or four movies of all time, and Part 3 is like unwatchably terrible.
What does that have to do with
several times still, but it's really, really bad. Bill Simmons says the same thing about Rocky IV. I was never into the Rocky, so I don't know.
So you're saying it could come back. There's no Godfather IV that came back, though.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, just because, like, the final, like, so the final season of Game of Thrones sucks, but, like, the first six seasons were so
perfect. No, okay, that's fine.
And so incredible.
Yeah, but we're ranking seasons now, so this shouldn't even be in the top 50. Like, if you're saying you want me to rush and Doll, it better be better than Game of Thrones.
Yeah, listen, like if I was ranking the top quarterbacks, I would still have Tom Brady near the top, even though I hate him and even though he's not so good this year.
So you'd have Tom Brady 2019 as the third best quarterback in the NFL?
No, but yeah. So
who would you rather have for one? By the way, we have not discussed football yet. It's the playoffs, and we're running out of time on this episode. Yeah.
You said to start with
I realize it was a mistake.
So
okay.
TV. Yeah. All right, number two is Our Boys, the HBO show. Did you watch this?
No, it's too close to home. Who wants to watch that?
Yeah, so it was so
no one involved on either side watched it. I can assure you.
What do you mean, no one involved?
Saying like nobody who like lived through it would want to watch it. It was too soon.
Well, let me say
it's like 30 years later.
The idiots who criticize it on both, like most of the idiots who criticize it from both the Israeli and the Palestinian perspectives, certainly didn't watch it. I thought it's the reason that I thought it was such a good show. So very briefly, it's about in 2014.
Just tell them to Google it because let's talk about football.
Fine. Okay. So, but the point is, that it's about a true story that happened in 2014 in Israel, and it's a procedural.
But by the way, just to be clear, there's an HBO show, not an Israeli show. In case people have never heard of it,
it's an HBO show. It's in English, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wait, is it in English or is there subtitles?
Remember. I didn't see it.
I don't remember either now because
it's
I
your
watch
number two.
Subtitles,
it's
so,
your number. What are you? Why are you blind? Deaf?
No, I always watch with subtitles. Subtitles are great because you pick up so much, you pick up subtleties.
Yeah,
and you
I'll
miss
tell you why
ones.
I don't like it because a lot of times they come on before the words are said and it ruins it.
Well, okay, so for comedy, it's not good. That's true. But I'll give you an example. I've noticed something recently. There's a lot of movies and TV shows have song selections for like where the song is a subtle hint at something, but I would never pick it up because I don't know the names of any songs. But now, on the captions, because it says the name of the song, I'm like, oh, I get it. Oh, that's why they're playing that, because this song is called Plague, and that's a reference to what, So that's the kind of thing you pick up. I also like how sometimes you'll notice decisions that the actors have made to change their line subtly, because the line and the caption is different than what the line of what the actor says.
You think they're sending them the script? I'm not sure how that works. I think it's just a mistake in the transcription service.
I think it's pretty clearly based on the script, is my perspective. Because they're not mistake like well whatever it doesn't matter that's what.
What's
I think
your
it
number
is,
one show of
all right? So anyway, so Our Boys, I really liked Our Boys. I thought so. It's like a straight procedural in a certain sense, but then it layers on top of it sort of the geopolitics of it. But then it layers on top of that like the internal struggles of people, like what it means, like who your loyalty is to, and what side you're on, and by the way, for those in sort of the Jewish or the pro-Israel world, like I don't think at all it portrays Israel in a bad light. I think it portrays Israelis dealing with conflict, and it shows good people and bad people, and it's certainly like I didn't feel like it was harmful to like the perception of Israel.
Okay, what's
like
number one
for those? Number one to me is Succession.
Again, no spoilers because I'm only two episodes in with my wife still.
All right, so the strict order again, it's anything.
But I love the first two episodes. But honestly. I was shocked that it's a 60-minute show and not a 30-minute show. And after watching two episodes, I kind of want it to be a 30-minute show.
Yeah, it's not. First of all, I love the opening theme song. If we
did
a theme
song bracket,
it's a great
theme song.
I have it in my head right now, like the tinkling piano there. The acting is great. A couple of the characters are great. Some of it, again, like the Rowan character, the Culkin character. Is that Macaulay Culkin? Which Culkin is that?
I don't know. Kieran Culkin?
Yeah. Whichever one it is, he is so annoying and so unrealistic. Like, a person like that would never be allowed to be the head of a major organization. But then again, you look at, like, Trump, and you're like, oh, well, maybe he would. Like, you know. So it's a little bit soapy at sometimes. And it's funny because, like Succession and Billions were very similar to me a couple years ago, and Billions keeps going down, Succession keeps going up. Is it my number one show of the year? No, it's really not. But again, I didn't put that much thought into my rankings. It's just, it's a show I, right now, it's probably the show when a new episode comes out that I'm more excited for than any other. Right, like, I'm looking at this list. Like,
no, I'd be very excited to watch it if this chick here was ever willing to watch it with me.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, it's probably, it's not my number one show of the year, but it's my, if a new episode comes out on Sunday night,
okay,
it's the
so
first show.
Okay, so you ranked
I'm watching
it number one. It's not your number one show of the year. Got it. Your number three show, yeah, well, it was admittedly garbage.
It's not about the rankings. It's about anything on my list is a show that I recommend watching and is a show I love talking about.
The
so
Chester Seal,
if you've seen any of the 20 shows I mentioned today and you want to chat with someone about it, please DM me.
Okay,
I'll be happy to chat.
Wow. All right, let's talk about football so people don't complain. Let's go in chronological order. By the way, do you remember...
Right, so at the 40-minute mark, we finally started talking about
football.
We played
a game where one of us got to pick, I think it was five teams, and the other one got the rest of the teams. Do you remember who picked who?
I picked... no, I don't remember anything.
Okay. You didn't write it down?
I think we did it on an episode. We had a guest on the episode, but I don't remember what we said.
Did, maybe Av was in the background. Who wrote it down? Nobody? All right, whatever.
I did write it down somewhere.
All right, fine. We'll get back to that. Anyway, so Buffalo, Texas. Let's start by talking about that game.
Okay, so, I mean, there's
Buffalo,
really nothing
Texans,
to say. Like,
excuse me.
It's a lock every year that the early game on Saturday will be the AFC for the matchup that involves either the Bengals or the Texans. The Bills are, you know, the Bills have only made the playoffs twice this century.
Such a bad matchup
that
the league,
into that
the
spot.
League had to do two AFC games on Saturday just because they were obviously going to give the night game to the Patriots.
Yeah, they've never done this before in the NFL where they split up the conferences on Saturday and Sunday, but then they don't do it.
Yeah,
the
no, it's
round,
fine to do it. They just have to do
over,
it on Saturday too, which is
completely screwing over the lower seed in the NFC next.
For the sake of CBS or Fox, which would have been mad to have two games in one day.
Yeah. So yeah, that's annoying. But anyway, what else?
Well, who do you like? Let's do spread and winner here.
Okay, I don't have a strong opinion about this game just because I don't care about this game, honestly, and I'm not going to see it because it's, you know, it starts before Shabbat's over, and I guess I'll watch the second half, but
I'll be rooting for the Texans. I think the Bills are going to win. I think the Bills will win outright.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow. So are you putting money on that?
No, not $100 million or anything, but I am predicting it. Do you have our updated with bowl results money situation?
Yes, okay. I do. All right. So last week, you bet on a whole bunch of bowls. Yeah, you did not do well in your bowl bets.
Yeah, I know. You did really well in the bowl pool. You almost won that thing. And are the pool... Oh, shoot. We should have... Can you actually start the episode with a message? Can you, like...
Yeah.
I want to plug the 4-1 NFL playoff pool. We're doing a playoff pool. Is the only chance we get to do it.
No, well, this is the start of the football part of the podcast. I'll say in the show notes, go to the 40-minute mark.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So anyone who cares about football will hear it, and anyone who doesn't care about football
no,
will
probably
be
people
in the pool
shut off
anyway,
the podcast because
so.
They were so mad we weren't talking about football, and then they didn't go to the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4-1 okay, playoff pool. Hit us up for details if you're interested. 4 pools in 1 should be fun. I messed up on the bowls. Oh, our pool of pools. We did 12 months, one pool a month, massive pool with a bunch of people. And it came down to the last day of the year, January 1st, a Michigan-Alabama game. And literally the pool was decided on the last day.
And it's crazy that a guy had essentially $2,500 riding on Michigan covering on a spread that they had no chance of covering, and yet he decided not to hedge or split it or anything.
No,
like
I haven't
that.
Heard from them. I don't know them.
Yeah. All right, now, has the Gator Bowl, when is the Gator Bowl? Is that
Yeah,
tonight?
I cut that pool off at January 1st, but there's two more bowls tonight. And, like, more the whole weekend, basically. So do you know when the championship game is not for, like, over a week?
Yeah. All right, you bet $100 million on Oklahoma to cover. That obviously did not work out in the first half. So you lost $100 million there. You put $100 million on Clemson to cover. Mm-hmm. They covered, so congratulations. Mm-hmm. You put Iowa, so you're up $100 million now. That's two wins and a loss. You had Wake Forest.
Against MSU.
They lost and did not cover, so that's 2-2. Oregon, you won, so you're up 3-2. And then you bet $200 million on Louisiana Tech. So you're actually up $300 million so far. So
okay, great. I'm crushing it.
So even if Tennessee doesn't cover, then you're still up $200 million. If Tennessee covers, you're all the way up to $400 million. So So you didn't. You did not do good in your Bulls overall, but your best bets on our podcast, you didn't do too badly. Actually.
Should we do? The only thing is, I think I might be doing Renap during like the second the Vikings game ends. I was wondering, should we do if the Vikings have like a heartbreaking loss, like they last time they played the Saints and they had a the opposite of heartbreaking loss, they had an exciting win. Yeah. We went straight into a podcast. Yeah. It would be nice to do it then.
Yeah.
But maybe you'll record your thoughts.
Yeah,
maybe
I mean,
if there's something crazy happens, you could just record a rant for 15 minutes.
We'll see if something crazy happens. You know, I'm sure it probably will. But all right. So let's go back to Buffalo at Houston. So you're picking Buffalo to go into Houston and win. So you're obviously picking them to cover as well. I'm going to pick Houston to win this game. I just, you know, it's sort of my feeling about Josh Allen is kind of like my feeling of Andy Dalton, who usually plays in this game, which is even if he has a decent regular season, do I trust him in the playoffs? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's do I trust Brown? And I mean, who are their like offensive weapons?
I love that Watt's coming back. That's exciting to me.
Yeah, that is now what he'll be at. We'll have to see. Obviously, I'd like to see him at full strength. I mean, look, if he's at full strength, that Houston is a contender in the AFC, which is good because we need more contenders in the AFC. So, and that's part of, you know, I think Houston's going to win because Houston's the only team, like Houston has a chance to go into Baltimore and win. I'm not saying they're going to, but they have a chance. Buffalo has no chance in hell.
Houston has a chance to go into Baltimore and win. Buffalo has no chance. I would agree with that.
Yeah. So, but you're picking Buffalo to win this game. I'm picking Houston to win this game. So glad to know we have disagreement right off the bat there. By the way, last week I went 14-2 picking winners and losers. You went 11-5.
Wow.
You we had a lot of disagreements and you lost three
more
than
season.
I did. So. Well, we go into the playoffs as well.
Yeah.
So I won 7 weeks. You won 6 weeks. I'm up 6 games than you overall. But you know, if
playoff
Buffalo
games triple,
take a lead here. Yeah. Now let me. I want to say something else, and I was going to say this for the Vikings game, but we can discuss this for all the games because that this is also relevant for the upcoming Tennessee New England game, which is the Saturday night game. So there's this narrative in the NFL, which I think you push it more than I do, but a lot of people push it, which is it's all about the quarterbacks, and whoever has the better quarterback is going to win, right? And that's sort of the narrative. You need to have a good quarterback. You need to have a good quarterback. You know, if you have a good quarterback, you win. If you don't have a good quarterback, you lose. The Minnesota talk radio and Minnesota Vikings Twitter and Vikings podcasting world is just apoplectic. They're so pissed. They hate this team right now. They want Zimmer fired, which is bonkers. The new thing is they want Zimmer fired so they can hire Stefanski.
People have been saying, well, because they think Stefanski's going to leave and he's the coach in waiting.
Look, I advocated once upon a time that Brad Childress should have been fired and Mike Tomlin should have been hired in his place. But at the time, my argument was the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, one of the most model franchises in football for 50 years. They'd had two coaches in the previous, 35, 40 years. If they're interested in your defensive coordinator, you fire your coach and you hire that defensive coordinator. And I stand by that take. Obviously, Childress turned out to not be very good, and Tomlin, you know, won a Super Bowl and, you know, has been good for a decade plus since then, notwithstanding some of his, you know, in-game shortcomings. I do not feel that way right now. I'm aware of Zimmer's shortcomings, and Stefanski apparently is a little bit more of an analytical eye and has some advantages. But no, you do not fire Zimmer under any circumstance, and you do not fire him to hire Stefanski. So I disagree with that. But I want to talk about this better quarterback thing. So I went and looked the last 2 years, and then I ended up going further back. But in the last 2 years, the team with the better quarterback of the 22 playoff games, how many times do you think they won?
Well, because you're saying this, I'm going to say 11-11.
Yeah, no. So, and I'm saying better quarterback based on that year, right? Because it can't just be career because, like, well, then who was the better quarterback when Peyton Manning placed Cam Newton in the Super Bowl? Like, well, Peyton Manning had the better career, but Cam Newton was the MVP that year, and Peyton Manning, you know, was terrible. So it's who's the better quarterback that year? The better quarterback has won only 9 games. The worst quarterback has won 13 games. Now, part of that is we had, like, the freak example of Nick Foles, right, 2 years ago, you know, going to the Super Bowl in a season in which he came in late in the year for Wentz and was complete garbage, and then he outplayed Brady and he outplayed.
Okay, but I hear everything you're saying is interesting. So Tannehill versus Brady, which is the game we're about to talk about, who's the better quarterback?
Yeah, well, Tannehill's clearly a better quarterback this year. But, I mean, it's do I think that, and that's why I brought up the Cam Newton versus Peyton Manning thing because everybody's saying, oh well, Peyton Manning's the way or Tom Brady's way better than Ryan Tannehill. Obviously, no one disagrees with you based on the history of their careers, but this year there's no way to make that argument. Tannehill's been better by every single metric you could possibly find, right? Is he going to lay an egg in the playoffs immediately? Possibly. Even if he's obviously playing a far better defense than Brady's playing. And so, you know, Tannehill could outplay Brady in this game, quarterback to quarterback, and New England will still win, and that's probably the most likely scenario. But
are you picking the Patriots to win?
No, I'm picking the Patriots to win. Yeah, this really will come into play more for the NFC games, I think, which we'll get to in a second. But, so 9-13 is the record for the better quarterback the last 2 years. But I kept going backwards. So the previous year, 2016, the better quarterbacks went 9-2. So that was much chalkier. And then I went back all the way for the previous decade. So from 2017 to from 2018 to 2009, so the last 10 years of playoff games, overall the better quarterback went 62 and 48.
Okay, so it was more of a 1 or 2 year blip, an anomaly.
So yeah, so overall the better quarterback wins 56% of the time, but 56% of the time is not a huge advantage. Now obviously sometimes
home field
quarterbacks is very close, right? Like, you know, Russell Wilson and Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, they were both, you know, elite quarterbacks that year, or Aaron Rodgers against Matt Ryan, you know. But sometimes there's a much bigger gap. So it's only 56%. So the point is that there's this idiotic narrative that I've been hearing in Vikings land, like, you know, like they were defending Zimmer for, and again, I don't think Zimmer should be fired, but they were defending Zimmer for his playoff failings by saying, well, he's had the worst quarterback in every single game that he's ever coached in the playoffs. And so, first of all, that's not true. Like, Case Keenum against Nick Foles, at least that year, Keenum was much better than Foles.
Listen, Mark Sanchez has beaten Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Philip Rivers in the playoffs.
Exactly. But also, that's the point. Yeah, so the Jets come in here and they ruin this because, you know, Sanchez won a bunch of games in two different playoffs in the last decade. The point is, like, this idea that the better quarterback is almost always going to win in the playoffs, that's simply not true. The better quarterback wins a little more than half the time. And so this week, you have three of the favorites have, you know, Deshaun Watson, obviously much better than Josh Allen, Drew Brees better than Kirk Cousins, and Russell Wilson better than Carson Wentz. And in all three of those games, the better quarterback is favored. But it's not because of the quarterback necessarily that team is favored, I don't think. I mean, Seattle, Philly probably is the most extreme example of where it is. But and then again, in New England, Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill's been much better this year. But that's, you know, I don't think that's why I don't think New England's favored because of Tom Brady, obviously. So the point is, I don't like this narrative that it's all about the quarterback, because we see Joe Flacco's and Nick Foles and mediocre quarterbacks play well, or Eli Manning, mediocre quarterbacks play well in the playoffs all the time. And we see good quarterbacks, you know, play well but lose. So I don't think it's all about the quarterback. But having said all of that, the Patriots are going to win this game.
Okay. Having said all that, I think the Titans win.
Yeah, wow.
I think the Titans are going to beat the Patriots. The dynasty is over.
And that's because they have the better quarterback?
No, I don't think the Patriots are going to, you know, I think they may be able to slow down Henry and Brown, but I don't think they're going to be able to score enough points to beat the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, Derrick Henry's been out of control lately. Steen, by the way, in our AYFFL, did not play Derrick Henry in the final week of the season. Very odd, because he only had 40 points, like 200-something yards. But he had missed the previous game. And
I thought about benching him, because he was really, like, looked iffy all week, and then they took him off the injury report, but I did put him in. I have the Titans winning, obviously covering.
I have New England winning, and I have New England covering. Okay. I think it'll be, like, 21-13. I think that Tannehill is who we thought he was.
So my Final Four in the AFC would be Tennessee, Baltimore, KC, Buffalo.
Yeah, so in that case, so then you'd have Buffalo going to face Kansas City, and Tennessee going to face... So you wouldn't even have Houston going to Kansas to Baltimore anyways, because you have
sort of want the New England Houston, you know, Baltimore KC matchups.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings are the biggest underdog this week, but to me, Tennessee is by far the least likely team.
It would be the biggest story for sure.
I mean,
the Vikings
just got
a schedule, like a bad schedule. Like, they're playing a 1 seed caliber team as the 3 seed.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, but I mean, the Tennessee Titans went like 9-7 this year. They go 9-7 every year, right?
I'll say this.
I mean, this is the fourth year in a row that the Titans went 9-7.
Yeah, but they didn't. They never had a receiver. Now they have AJ Brown. They had Mariota all 4 years.
Yeah,
Daniel's playing better. Henry's for whatever reason playing the best ball of his career. These Alabama running backs, for some reason, get better with age. Speaking of Alabama running backs, the team that the.
By the way, the defense though was much worse.
Yeah, the defense is just a slightly above average defense. Tennessee. Yeah, it's weird that the Patriots drafted a running back in the third round who played at Alabama and basically have given him, I think, like 2 snaps all season. It would be so Belichick-like to give him 18 snaps this week.
The way that the Patriots have drafted skill position guys in general, I mean, their receivers, they just whiff time after time after time.
I mean, Harry might end up being good, but not yet.
Well, this is certainly not yet. And he has opportunities because they need somebody. So.
Yeah, Sanu is...
I have New England winning this game. Do I think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl? No.
KC is lucky because obviously KC can't play Tennessee. But if Tennessee beats New England, that's the last play.
All right. So let's go to this Vikings-Saints game. So obviously I have a lot to say about this game. So I'll start off, as you said, I mean, the Saints are 13-3 and are the 3 seed, which is insane. The Vikings also got incredibly bad luck with the way that the final regular season game ended, because if Seattle had pulled that off, the Vikings would have played Seattle and then Green Bay, which is the worst, or which is the worst and the second worst teams in the NFC, I think, of the playoff teams. Instead, they have to play New Orleans and San Francisco, which is the best and the second best. So, I mean, the Vikings would have, and you pointed this out a couple of weeks ago, but the Vikings would have the toughest road of any wildcard team ever if they were to go to the Super Bowl, which they're not going to. But on the other hand, I'm not really that upset about it because my feeling is like the season wasn't meant to be anyways, and if it is meant to be, then we got to go through these teams anyway. So, you know, let's do it. So people in Minnesota are all convinced this game is going to end 44-17.
I have 30-16 written down as the score.
Yeah, the sky is falling, and that's why the spread is so big. And it's kind of insane because before that loss to the Packers, which was a bad, they were 5.5-point favorites at home. You know, by every metric, they were a better team than the Packers on neutral field. The Packers, who were 2 seed and 13-3, like that was a terrible game. And the Vikings have had 2.5 terrible games this year. They had a terrible game against Chicago early in the year. They had a terrible game at home against Green Bay. And then they had a terrible first quarter against Green Bay in week two. Other than those two games and a quarter, they've played excellently all year. I mean, not every facet of their team. Like, their cornerbacks have sucked. But, like, overall as a team, like, by advanced stats, the Vikings going into the Green Bay game were the second-best team in the NFC behind San Francisco. And so, like, there's this little bit of sky is falling. I think it's a little bit like the Minnesota Vikings Twitter world and podcast world is just, like, out of control. Like, okay, they had a bad game against Green Bay. Everybody's had a bad game this year, right? Like, there's no team. Baltimore lost at home to Oakland, got blown out. They lost to Oakland and Cleveland. They got blowout losses twice this year, right? And Baltimore, I think, has the best point differential of all time this year. Like, every single team had bad games this year. And, you know, the Vikings did not have Eric Kendricks against Green Bay, who was, you know, people were talking about as a defensive player of the year candidate. They did not have Delvin Cook or his backup, Alexander Mattison. And Adam Thielen still was banged up. So I think if all of those guys are healthy, there's no way the Vikings should be 7.5-point underdogs
in
this game.
And, like, I don't think it's reasonable.
So that's the big question. So Thielen, since his injury, has not done anything. Is he injured? Is he not injured? He claims he's 100%. That's a big if, because the Vikings have the worst third receiver in the NFL. And so if Thielen's out, then it just digs to nobody else. So that's a huge problem. The offensive line was good all year. Cousins was barely touched, and then they were just abysmally awful in that game against the Packers. Now, the Saints, you know, I think that the most important player in this game, well, I guess it's probably Cousins, but the second most important player in this game is probably Jordan Cameron.
Why?
Well, because if he's getting pressure on the Vikings, then they're going to be in a lot of trouble. And Riley Reiff, you know, has to be able to stop him one-on-one because they can't use Delvin Cook. They can't have Cook chipping every time because they need Cook going into the flat to catch the ball because they don't have enough pass receivers if Thielen's not 100%. So they need Delvin Cook to be 100% in this game. And then defensively, they need Kendricks to be 100% this game. And then, you know, the Saints offense, Drew Brees has been, what are they, averaging 40 points a game in the last 4 weeks, something like that?
Yeah.
The Saints are absolutely unstoppable right now offensively, but defensively, you know, they got lit up by
injuries.
San Francisco. Who? Yeah. New Orleans. On defense. Yeah. I said this even before the season. I said, you know, I'd be more afraid to face the Bears than the Chiefs. I said at the time when we thought the Bears were a playoff team and the Chiefs were the best team in the NFL. Like, the Vikings, I think, can score with anybody, and I still think that. The question is, an elite defense can stop them. I don't think New Orleans has an elite defense. So if Thielen's healthy, I really think this is a toss-up game. I really do. You know, Zimmer has played very well against Sean Payton. You know, they go back to being, you know, the D coordinator and the offense coordinator for the Cowboys in the 90s. Zimmer has always done well against the Saints for whatever reason. The Vikings, has Zimmer lost to the Saints as the Vikings coach?
I don't know. I mean, technically,
I'd have to check.
The game they won, they should have lost.
Yeah, but that game went back and forth so many times in the last 2 minutes. Yeah, but they won that game, obviously, on the miracle. But the year before, in week one, was the game where Bradford threw for, like, 380 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, the Vikings have done very well against New Orleans. Drew Brees, you know, who arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, even though he wasn't in the NFL 100, he has not done that well against the Vikings historically. He's had turnovers, and he's not a mobile guy. And so I'm less afraid of him than I am of, like, Aaron Rodgers, because even though he's vastly outplayed Rodgers this year, because if the Vikings can get pressure, and, you know, that's something that they've been very good at for most of the season. You know, Breeze can't move. The Vikings have not been susceptible to passing out of the backfield, so I'm not really afraid of Kamara. Mike Thomas is probably going to have, you know, 13 catches for 150 yards in this game. And, you know, Xavier Rhodes has been the biggest hole on this Vikings team the entire season, and now all he has to do is cover the best receiver in the NFL. So that's obviously a worry. But I don't really see, like, I guess Jared Cook has played well the last few weeks, but, you know, Jared Cook is a 34-year-old tight end, sort of journeyman.
I mean,
like, who
Cook's been really good. Like,
he's been really good, but it's just, who are you, like, after Mike Thomas, who are you afraid of? Who's the big weapon
probably
on this
Cook.
New Orleans
Cook
team?
Gets
Kamara. Yeah, Kamara's been really good the last few weeks, but I think that the Vikings are not a great matchup for him. So I think what this comes down to, look, it comes down to obviously if Cousins is gonna sort of like fit the narrative of Cousins in a big game like he did against the Packers 2 weeks ago, then whatever, the Vikings are gonna get blown out in this game. But I don't think that narrative is very accurate, notwithstanding the Packers game. I think that he's played very well in all of their primetime games this year. He played very well in Seattle when they lost a close game on Monday Night Football, and he played very well in a bunch of other games that they won and also games that they lost close games. I think Cousins can be fine. Having Delvin Cook back 100% healthy will be key. And if Thielen is healthy, I really honestly think this is a 50-50 game. If Thielen's not healthy, then the Vikings are going to be in a little bit of trouble. And I don't know what the answer to that is. And then on the other side, Kendricks. If Kendricks is not healthy, then they got no chance on defense, because Kendricks is the one who's going to be responsible for stopping Alvin Kamara coming out of the backfield. So that's my take on this game. I'm going to take the points. I'm going to pick New Orleans to win, but I'm going to take the points.
New Orleans to win and cover.
Okay, Akiva, so that brings us to the final game of the weekend. The game of the week, the game with the lowest spread, so the closest game projected, even though by FPI and other advanced systems, it's the least enticing game in terms of the quality of the teams involved, but I guess that's why it's the closest matchup. It's the Seahawks, who won every single game by 1 or 2 points this year, against the Eagles, who managed to survive the garbage that was the NFC East. And to talk about this game, we're going to bring on two longtime guests of 32 Fans, Eagles fan Shamir Seidman and Seahawks fan Josh Gresham. So Shamir, Josh, welcome back to 32 Fans. Shamir, we're going to start with you. What was your confidence level through most of the season that you were actually going to make the playoffs? I famously said when the Eagles were 4-5, oh yeah, they're going to win out and win the division at 11-5 because their schedule's easier than the Cowboys. And they kept losing, and I kept saying, well, they're still going to win the division. And ultimately, I was right, but only by not by anything the Eagles did, more just because the Cowboys collapsed.
Well, the first quarter of the season kind of sucked, and you couldn't really tell which team you were getting week to week. They beat Green Bay on the road, and they lost to the Vikings, and they were winning games they weren't supposed to win, losing games they weren't supposed to lose. And then, it was hard to really figure out what was going on. And then they went on that three-game stretch where they played the Patriots, the Seahawks, and the Dolphins, and looked awful, awful, awful in those three games. And I wrote the season off. It's over. It's done. Move on. Figure out draft position and call it a day. And then that's when the Doug Peterson magic kicks in. Just when you count us out, we're back.
So talking about magic, Josh, a lot of Seahawks fans after week 16, when their number one, number two, and number three running backs all were gone for the season, this is from a team that runs the ball 30 times a game, they were sort of writing off the season as well. But then you guys re-signed Beast Mode, and every Seahawks fan is super pumped and super back into it. And then in week 17, against a much better team, as the Seahawks do every single week, they found a way to take that game down to the wire. They ended up losing it. And they are playing this week the wild card instead of hosting probably the Vikings. I think they want to host it as a 3-seed. So what's your feeling about the Seahawks coming into the playoffs?
I mean, similar to Shamir, I think like this was definitely one of the weirder Seahawks seasons that I can remember. And every single game was close, and they typically played much better against better teams, with the exception of they never play well against the Rams. I think in a weird way, them having all their running backs hurt might help them, because then stupid Pete Carroll might not insist on running the ball 35 times a game. And give it to their best player to actually win games, because their defense isn't good enough to win the way Pete Carroll wants to win anyway. So if anything, like losing the San Francisco game, I think helped them, because assuming that, if they beat the Eagles, they get to play San Francisco again, who they obviously can play very closely, whereas I think they would have had to go to New Orleans otherwise, and they would have gotten slaughtered in the Superdome that first game. So in a weird way, I think it was kind of a good thing them losing. And obviously, Chris Carson and Penny were playing extremely well. But it kind of forces their hand to put the ball in Wilson's hands, which is definitely the best way for them to actually get hot in any capacity.
Yeah, DK Metcalf in the second half of the season really emerged as a star receiver. And Tyler Lockett sort of disappeared a little bit down the stretch. But, he's still one of the most efficient downfield threats in the game also. Let me ask you, playing the Eagles, and I guess this is a question for both of you, I don't really think of Seattle and Philly as, a big rivalry. Have there been any, specific moments between these teams that has caused enmity? Because as a Vikings fan, I hate both your teams for different reasons.
Without doing too much research, I don't think the Eagles have ever beaten Russell Wilson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Carson Wentz has never lost a playoff game. So.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that for some reason the Seahawks have never – I don't even know if they've been in a close game against the Eagles since Russell Wilson. I know the score seemed closer in the November game, but yeah. I watched that game and the Eagles had literally zero chance to win that game at any point. They were as bad a team as I've seen all year.
That was a low point in the season. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. They were banged up. They were throwing to guys who, like, it was crazy. I've never seen an NFL team look like that bad. Who that had a good quarterback in theory, you know.
Now we talked, Shamir, we talked about the Eagles, the Seahawks injuries of running back. Who are the pass catchers who are going to be helping this game for the Eagles, other than Dallas Goedert?
No one's really sure if Zach Ertz is going to play. I think we're going to assume he's not going to play. So their starting number one wide receiver is Greg Ward, who was on the practice squad at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. By the way,
I didn't know this podcast was happening. Alex just said, by the way, I invited Shamir and Gratian on for a 1 o'clock podcast. And I'm like, well, you invited Josh. Josh had a baby like a few days ago. Like I think it was a girl, right? But if it was a boy,
it's 8 days old.
I was saying if it was a boy, there wouldn't even be like a bris yet. But I guess, you know, Chester doesn't he doesn't follow Facebook or something. But Josh has already done more parenting to this kid than I have to like two of my four. I think he would argue.
That's probably true.
You interrupted Shamir talking about the injured receivers on the Eagles.
sorry, Shamir. Well, keep talking about the receivers.
To be fair, Josh is rude baby interrupted.
Yeah, no, the baby was rude, not me.
Yeah, I apology
accepted. Apology accepted. Eagles number one wide receiver Greg Ward, formerly of the practice squad. Number two wide receiver, I guess. Is there also their backup tight end, which is Josh Perkins, who was in the Redskins practice squad a few weeks ago. And their number three wide receiver, also from the Redskins practice squad, is Robert Davis. And their fourth wide receiver is, I think, on the Jets practice squad, Deontay Burnett. So
I didn't even know he's in the NFL.
Whenever you can get pass catchers from vaunted offenses like the Redskins and the Jets, you know you have to try.
Well, that group that I just mentioned put up their highest offensive output last week against the Giants of the whole season.
The Jets did not deem it worthwhile to add Deontay Burnett to their practice squad. He was in training camp.
Street free agent. Yeah.
He's in training camp. He's the quarterback's like one of his best friends, and they still didn't think he was good enough.
Well, Deontay Burnett had the Eagles' second longest catch by a wide receiver this entire season last week.
Yeah, he's not bad. He actually played well in the preseason.
Yeah. So, I mean, the offense is, since that three-game stretch, they had went on a four-game winning streak against. They beat the Cowboys, the Redskins, and the Giants. Or three-game winning streak, I should say.
Well, Shamir, let's talk about the secondary for the Eagles was sort of the biggest hole in the early part of the season.
Yeah.
And as we said, Seattle with Metcalf and Lockett and no running backs is going to have to throw the ball. Shamir seems to have suffered the same fate as many of the Eagles this season and making an injury.
He's waiting to get into the blue tent.
All right. Well, so while Shamir is being looked
well, I've at, got a question for Josh. That's also a good question for Shamir. What, looking back, I'm sure you've rewatched the tape several times. Looking back at the Eagles Seahawks game from 6 weeks ago, what are your big takeaways in terms of like what could happen on Sunday?
Well, I think
for people who don't remember, the Seahawks won 17-9 in Philly.
Yeah, and that nine, they scored a touchdown with like under a minute left. The Eagles, like in prevent defense, like they had 3 points the whole game against a bad defense. I mean, it was kind of the second game where the Seahawks had their safety that they had traded for, Diggs, who has been great. And one of the reasons they suffered the last couple of weeks was they were without him. It was also one of like two games where they actually got pressure on the quarterback because the Eagles offensive line was also decimated just like everything else. So it was honestly an extremely boring game. The Seahawks had a couple big run plays and they had one deep pass play. and Wilson had some very uncharacteristic, like, easy touchdown misses. But it was really never in doubt. It was, yeah, I mean, Hollister with no one within 10 yards of him.
Yeah.
And, like, Wilson just kind of overthrew him.
Yeah.
I may have lost some fantasy that week.
Yeah, I could imagine.
It was really Josh the Rashad Penny game, and of course Penny's not going to be there this Sunday.
Yeah,
And Wentz turned the ball over four times. That was really the story. Of the
five
game.
Five. Oh,
Nelson, Nelson Aguilar was responsible for Shamir's line, and it dropped. But apparently he's back on. Right, Shamir, you there again?
I think Shamir's here now.
I guess not. It's another drop for Aguilar. All right, so Josh, let's cut to the chase. What's your prediction for this game?
I have a hard time seeing the Seahawks lose this game, and this is coming from someone who's watched pretty much every game this year and does not have a ton of confidence in the Seahawks, but I just think the Eagles are too banged up, and the things that the Seahawks really like have that they struggle with, they won't have such a hard time because they struggle against those like really quick like slot receiver type guys. And I just don't see the Eagles with the firepower to do that. And I don't think it's going to be like a blowout because obviously the Seahawks don't blow anyone out. But I'm pretty confident that they're going to win this one.
Shamir also, by the way, again, his line has dropped for whatever reason, but he's made a prediction. He has 24-21 Eagles, so he has the Eagles.
That's a shocker. Shamir, who usually predicts the Eagles go 15-1.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have the Eagles scored 24 points against someone that's not the Giants?
Yeah. Keith, what's your pick here for this game?
You know, I watched the Eagles-Seahawks game. I'm trying to think back. And the truth is, Josh talked about how they really had Wentz under fire all game, and they did. They knocked him. He lost two fumbles in addition to the two picks. But the Eagles were also able to get at Russell all game. They sacked him six times. Russ had a great game.
And the Eagles' pass rush was absent for much of the season. I mean, they destroyed Luke Falk, obviously, in week three.
Yeah.
But they had a pass rush in this game. Now, Wilson's, been running for his life for much of his career, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not running anymore. The Seahawks, were only able to complete 13 passes. They relied completely on the run. That's probably not going to be there just based on the personnel. I think Marshawn Lynch is a fun story, but if he's doing anything other than running on third and one or fourth and one, I think you're overtaxing him.
Yeah.
Now, how did you feel when he came out there on the 1 yard line before the full start for what seemed like the touchdown at the time?
Emotions? I mean, I think you have to, like, it's funny because I'm usually a pretty pessimistic fan in general, but like something about seeing Marshawn in a Seahawks jersey just filled my heart with gladness.
Yeah.
he's just so, I don't know, he's my favorite all-time Seahawk by a pretty considerable margin. And
no love for Sean Alexander.
It was just really, no, Sean was, I mean, Sean was running untouched for like 5 years. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Marshawn was the glue on those teams, on those like great teams. And so, I don't know, it was just, it was very fun, and I was hoping that he didn't get quite as many carries as he did, but he did start to kind of. He had a couple decent runs in the second half, and he had that. I mean, the touchdown, just the place went absolutely bonkers. It was awesome. Yeah. And Keith, what you were saying about Russell Wilson got battered around, and one of the most infuriating things about the Seahawks is they never seem to stick with the things that work. Like, clearly what worked in the second half against San Francisco, against a far superior defense and a far superior defensive line, was they did these little quick passes and they moved Wilson around. And like, because they weren't relying on the running game, they had a lot of like quick passes to Travis Homer, who actually looked pretty good. If they did that, I think they'd win this game by two touchdowns, but I just never trust Brian Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll to do those kinds of things. For whatever reason, they can't seem to figure out that that's what's going to work. And if they did, like, they'd win this game with ease, I think, because I just think the Eagles are too beat up.
All right, Keith, what's your pick?
What's the line?
The line, this line was weird. It opened with Philly favored, then it was Seattle favored by 1.5.
Yeah, I think I guessed this right, or at least better than you did.
You guessed at Seattle at 1 at the time that we did our guess. The spreads was Seattle 1.5. I guessed the Pick'em.
I think the Seahawks are going to win outright, but the Seahawks are really the Chargers of the NFC, and this is as far as they go.
I'll say this to me is the toughest game of the week, basically because I disrespect both teams so much. Honestly, I think if the Cowboys had won this division, I would absolutely be picking them to beat Seattle. It's hard to pick the banged up Eagles team to beat Seattle, even though Seattle, in my mind, is basically an 8-8 team, you know, with an all-world quarterback. And, you know, while they lost Chris Carson in their running game, I think that, Metcalf really, as a rookie receiver, really has emerged in the second half of the season. So I think they have a little bit more offensive firepower. It's going to be a relatively low-scoring game. I'll say Seattle looks like 20-16 or something like that.
Chester, yeah. In 2017, when the Eagles played the Falcons, who did you pick in that game?
I'm sure I picked.
What about the Vikings game right after that? What about the Patriots game right after that? What about the Bears game? What about the Bears game in the playoffs last year?
Yeah, but those were all with Nick Foles, ready to go.
Oh, okay. Well, don't bet against Big Ball Doug.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm gonna pick the Seahawks in a close game, but I'm not betting on this game. This game is a real toss up. It's the toughest game of the four, I think. All right, Josh and Shamir, both of you, best of luck. If the Vikings have lost in some horrific way early in the day, I'll probably be too depressed to even bother watching this game. Quite likely what will happen, so I probably wouldn't even see part of this game. But best of luck, and maybe we speak to one of you next week when you play probably San Francisco, unless the Vikings win.
All right, sounds good. Go Bird.
Eva, I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
What makes a house a home? Been running for so long. When I met you, I couldn't let you. What makes a house a home? What makes a house a home? Been running for so long. When I met you, I couldn't let you. What makes a house a home? Been running for so long, been running for so long. Been running for so long, been running for so long. What makes a house a home? Been running for so long. When I met you, I couldn't let you. I'm tired of being alone. My, oh my Lord, I just can't hardly wait. We've come so far through the darkest days. The long night's over and I'm starting to believe I'm not as broken as some made me out to be. What makes a house a home? Been running for so long. When I met you, I couldn't let you. What makes a house a home? What makes a house a home? Been running for so long. When I met you, I couldn't let you. Oh, I'm tired of being alone. Been running for so long. 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 When I met you, I couldn't let you. Oh, I'm tired of being alone. Been running for so long. Been running for so long.